So it's not an international show, but we're on the cusp of an international show.
Sort of.
Well, sort of. One of the four of us, I'll let you guess who, is headed to Barcelona.
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 Yeah.
That would be Mark.
We need to look up. In fact, we need to.
That would be Rufus Wainwright. But
yes, that's on my favorite Rufus Wainwright song.
We need to check the audience stats and see what massive contingent we have in Barcelona.
Oh, what a great idea!
Yeah, we could send you to meet them. You're going to have some free time.
I will have some free time.
So, what's going on, Mark? The fruit of your loins is playing soccer. Is that right?
My oldest son is going to be playing soccer for 2 weeks with the FC Barcelona camp there. So
yeah, they do these crazy camps, right?
Yeah, and he will be training in the same grounds that Lionel Messi and Iniesta and many others have
and a
trained.
A bunch of people I've never heard of.
Yeah,
yes. And my hope is that the same thing happens. That happened when you went to England the last time and we were doing the podcast while you were gone and you were posting photos of you at the pub at like the equivalent of 8:15 in the morning local time.
Oh, there would definitely be plenty of that. Except it'll be 7:15 because I'm actually an hour more ahead.
Are
you
going
to get a siesta in like every afternoon?
I probably will. I don't,
he's going to get a siesta.
I'm kind of
playing it
Spanish
loose.
People.
Like however it happens.
Yeah, we keep trying to schedule Mark. He's not having it. Anyway, whatever. More to tell, but for now, why don't we get this show on the road? I'm Kevin.
I'm Ryan.
I'm Shane.
I'm Mark.
This is Somebody Likes It. So last week or the last show that we recorded, I mentioned, and Shane, don't get all excited because I have to mention Morrissey because that's what we talked about it last week. But
2 weeks in a row, Kevin brings up Morrissey.
Well, yeah, but that's not really the point. The point is
like
that apparently Consequence of Sound, where that article about like the nuts and berries that Morrissey eats broke. I think they managed to come out with something that I think is frankly more entertaining. And let's be honest, the bar for that was pretty low. they posted that apparently there are a bunch of Red Hot Chili Peppers fans who've been mistakenly buying tickets for the Scottish bagpipe band Red Hot Chili Pipers. And actually
that is really awesome
to the show and then just waiting for Flea to show up and he never does. And the subhead for the article is, it was at this moment I realized I was not going to see the Red Hot Chili Peppers. and some of them have stayed for the entire show and said, well, for what it was pretty good.
Still pretty good.
just
why
not
was it only $5?
Right, exactly.
Are these the ones that
secret show?
Are these the ones that play the bagpipes on unicycles with flames coming out of their bagpipes?
I mean, I could show you the promo photo, and I mean, it looks like that could be on the menu.
Yeah,
like, yeah,
it certainly does look like that.
They're not. They're not headlining based on pure talent. So
I have noticed that Flogging Molly and Dropkick Murphys are touring together, and like, aren't they pretty much the same band?
I was gonna say like, I can't.
If you were to play Boss Tones and then just be done with it.
That's like the tour when Cracker toured with Camper Van Beethoven.
Camper, yeah,
yeah. Those guys just walk from one side of the stage to the other. All right. Well, anyway. Whose week is this? I mean, really, it's all of ours, but who chose?
It was Shane.
Shane.
It was me.
Shane.
It was me. And
tell
and
us what's going on.
Well, Ryan, did you, I don't know why I'm so bad at often remembering the titles of the albums that I want to want to talk about, but I had.
Did you say it wrong?
I think I said at a bottom of a hill, but here's the thing. I completely misremembered what the entire title was.
From a basement on the hill.
I know, but I thought it was from a basement on the bottom of the hill. It's completely the opposite. And for 20 years, or however long, 15 years, this album has been around. I've never gotten the title.
But the name of the title is tricky. It's like Hill Valley.
It talks about a basement, which is subterranean, but it's at the top of a hill, and so it can, you know.
I mean, I'm not saying it can't exist.
It's like your mind's playing tricks on you.
What? Who did that song?
That was Bushwick Bill with
Boys. Yes, I remember now. Yeah, Elliot Smith, one of the great American songwriters, at least in my opinion. And I've put off listening to this. I've heard a couple of songs over the years, and every time I'll hear one of the songs, I've always been surprised that it was as good as it was, because I don't know, for whatever reason, I expected this album to be. It was very traumatic when he died, and some friends of mine that lived in Portland, Oregon at the time happened to be visiting like a few days afterward, and so lots of traumatic conversations, you know, because he spent like his formative musical years there. And I expected this album to really be sort of a cobbled together, half written song kind of thing.
Well, it wasn't finished.
It wasn't finished, but the songs were pretty damn near done. I mean, I was very pleasantly surprised at the quality of the writing of the songs.
Well, and I think to no small degree, the fact that the record was co-produced by a guy who had produced three of his prior records and an ex-girlfriend who was also a producer.
So those are we'll get into that in a minute. Rob Schnaff, they go way back in Portland. And that's actually kind of a controversial thing, because the guy that did the recording, I can't think of his name, somebody McDonald. I would highly recommend, if anybody's listening to this and you are at all a fan of Elliot Smith, and the best oral history I've ever read is the Pitchfork oral history of Elliot Smith's career. And it's like, you could damn near make a book out of it. It's so long. And it has some interesting shit in there. And part of it is, we'll go into that later.
I'd almost be more surprised if it wasn't controversial. Like, you know what I mean?
Well,
under the circumstances.
Well, a lot of stuff was. Whether or not he actually committed suicide or it was homicide.
There's a lot of shit to quote Kevin Newsom to unpack.
Yes. You're well. That'll be $5.
Thank you. But anyway, so personally, I liked it. Like, there's nothing on here that, you know, of course, what is going to be as good as at either or. It's one of the greatest
either
albums
or
ever written.
Masterpiece.
Yeah, it's one of the best albums that
I've
ever written.
But it hangs in there with like the best of his catalog. Like,
this one?
Yeah, Figure 8 or XO.
I thought this was one of the best albums he ever put out, personally. Like, I mean, just as far as like consistency of an album.
The quality is great. It's a bummer.
There's some really, 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 some of these lyrics are really fucking tough to listen to. But there's nothing on there that's really like a super, super standout. You know, like
there's not a super hit single, although I guess To a Friend, Farewell to a Friend.
Farewell to a Friend is what I'd heard that before.
Yeah, I think that was released to like AAA
Pretty Ugly Before.
This Pretty Ugly Before was the single that they actually released. But the interesting thing about that, what is this cat's name?
Fond Farewell to a Friend is what it's
called. Fond Farewell to a Friend. That's the one I'd heard before. The guy that actually did the recording of these songs, somebody McDonald, who by the way also said in the Wikipedia, Elliot Smith Wikipedia page, that during the recording of the tracks, I think they recorded 30 tracks and 15 are included on this.
Dave McConnell.
He said that he was smoking $1,500 of heroin / crack a day when they were recording this.
Elliot Smith was?
Yeah. Like,
that's not healthy.
No. That's not a long-term plan.
Unless it's just really small samples that are way overpriced.
Yeah, you could just be bad.
Okay, well,
bad
that's
at business.
It's still
just
probably
going to a bunch of different dealers and acting like it's the first time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, they just know that he's
try heroin.
They know that he's fucked up, so they're really just ripping him off. That's my feelings on the record, and there's so many interesting things to talk about this guy. And about, I was reading something and somebody was describing like the last show they saw him, he was uncharacteristically gaunt with stringy, oily hair. And I was like, dude, I've seen that guy perform before.
I saw him twice, and that's exactly what he looked
That's
like.
Exactly what he looked like. Yeah. And he smelled bad, too. Like, I mean,
I never got close enough to smell him.
He didn't. I met him once. Oh, Sam Coombs was the same way. Those motherfuckers didn't wear deodorant, dude. I don't know, like, if it was from years of wanting to be together, but like one of the things you don't want, especially like, you know, Sam Coombs, who was the main songwriter in Quasi, Elliot Smith used to play bass with them on tour. Janet Weiss and Sam Coombs. And it was reciprocal. Sam Coombs often played bass with him when he was on the road. One of the things you don't really want to encounter is meeting someone.
B.O. In confined spaces?
Not just B.O. I mean when they fucking bash their head in a wall performing, you know, sad songs and they're covered in sweat and you just can't get close enough to even have a conversation with them. It's kind of what those guys were like. So
one of the things that struck me was kind of interesting, and I did a ton of reading. I mean, they're frankly, like, this was one of those, you know, especially given the violent circumstances of his death and then like his rapid rise to fame, generally speaking, and like the arc of his catalog, per what you were talking about, Shane, with the oral history. Like, this is one of those records that even if they didn't necessarily like having to write what they wrote, I just got the feeling that reviewers were tripping over themselves to write about this, like, it's essentially to have something to write about Elliot Smith.
Elliot Smith was what you would, in many
he
ways,
was like
the
tailor made.
He
for
was
music
the epitome. I'm saying he's the epitome of a critical darling, and rightfully so. I mean, you know, again, I mean, sometimes I remember I cannot. You know, the first time I ever heard Chris Simpson turn me on to Elliot Smith. We used to. You remember him?
Chris Simpson,
the singer,
Mineral.
Mineral, yeah. And then some other band.
There was another emo
that.
Band, but Mineral was a big deal for a little while.
They were. And so Chris Simpson and I, we temped together, and he's like, "Hey, you're in Kling," and I was like, "Hey, you're in Mineral. We played together," and we would exchange CDs. And he was like, "Dude, you got to hear this shit." And like the first song, it was the one with Needle in the Hay on it. The Elliot Smith.
There was Roman Candle.
The one after Roman Candle and before XO.
Before Either Or.
Either Or, I mean, right. Boy, that was an eye-opening thing to me that you could have just an acoustic guitar and then write these incredible pop songs rather than, like, you know, Bob Dylan type shit.
It's like he inherited DNA from the Beatles, but I went back and listened to this record again last night, and I took notes, which I forgot to bring with me. But I do remember what I wrote at the top of the page. Right. Elliot Smith equals depressed Beatles.
You know, it's funny. I was thinking about this on the way over here. I was like, Ryan is either going to really like this record or really hate it. And
I really like it, but it's fucking depressing.
Well,
and I listened to, I actually had heard it before. My buddy Neil Turner, that Kevin you've met, the wine guy, he ripped a copy of it for me, like right after he died, and I was still in mourning. So I listened to it like once, and it was like really dark and kind of angry sounding, and I'd never listened to it again.
And a lot of like, there's a lot of like what could be construed as foreshadowing in there. Like, he just puts
right.
it all out there.
That's
like,
what I think.
Song titles
so
just
difficult.
Read like a fucking suicide note.
But then there are some sweet, sweet songs in there.
Well, too. And I do think that, speaking of the critical darling thing, like that's a little bit of where I feel like that comes from, right? Like, there is that with given the Beatles influence, like there is a little. It's like. Yeah, it's like a little bit of sun breaking through heavy clouds. Like, that's how some of these tracks feel to me, like, aesthetically.
Right,
like,
towards, yeah, there's like, Twilight. There's a couple on there that are definitely, the single, I don't know why I can't remember, Ugly Before, right, yeah. Right. That's another one that's really sweet. In fact, why don't we listen to that?
Yeah,
why don't
let's
we
do
listen
it.
To the Pretty Ugly Before. Did I get it right that time? And then, you know, at some point I'll stop being gushing so effusively about how I feel about this record and actually ask what Kevin's opinion of it is, because he hasn't been included.
In a minute, I'll have one.
Sounds good. Okay. All right. Let's do it.
All right. I met a girl, snowball in hell. She was hot and as cracked as a Liberty Bell. Don't go down, stay with me, baby, stay.
nugget.
It is a tasty nugget.
It's a good song. And I think I'm going to disprove your theory that I'm either going to love this record or I'm going to hate it. I don't love it as much as, like, I recognize the quality of it, because there's a certain aspect of it that I don't know if it's minor chords or just kind of a down-tuning kind of thing. It's not quite Mac DeMarco kind of, like, off-putting, but there is, like, kind of some dissonance.
There's a little dissonance. Yeah, some warbly. Yeah,
okay, so that's the thing. There's stuff about this album. I guess, like, some of that, there are a couple of songs where he does a kind of a almost heavy metal thing that I'm not the biggest fan of those songs. But I think in general, that one, that song, the first time I heard it, I was like, oh, I get it, why they picked it as a single. Second time I heard it, I was like, yeah, I like it a little more. That time I listened to it, I was like, yeah, I pretty much love this song.
Yeah, it sounds
like,
great.
Like, I think a lot of these songs, unlike in my experience with his earlier stuff, it definitely is one of those rewards repeated listening, other than some of those heavy metal
certainly
songs.
Like, yeah, I definitely liked it more having a little distance from it this time, because like the first time I heard it, he'd been dead for like a week or something.
No, I think
whatever.
It came out a few years after that, but still.
I was working at Vin Bistro.
This was a posthumous record.
Yes, it was. But it was probably maybe 6 months or something, but it didn't come out that long after he had died.
I thought it was a couple of years.
And anyway, my buddy ripped me a copy
almost
of
a
it.
Year after.
Yeah, okay. Most of the...
So Brent's right.
But anyway, like, I just remember, like, finding it a little discordant and just not being that into it then. I liked it more now.
He wanted it to be discordant, and that's the thing. If you go back and you listen to his comments, I mean, that was kind of one of the things he was really going for this album, was, like, trying to do some work.
Like the Elliot Smith in Utero?
Yeah. I mean, that's actually not a bad way to put it, I think. I think, you know, is it... I think there comes, especially with somebody like him, like going through like a difficult last few years of his life, where you're like, I want to do something different that's not the capital E, capital S Elliot Smith, mm-hmm. You know?
Which is not even his real name. His name is Steven. But,
right, but yeah. Okay.
But no, but you know, I get your point.
Yeah. So this song actually was released before his death in August of 2003.
Interesting. The guy that recorded this record said he didn't even want it to be on the record, on the album. But I don't know, man. That dude, listen, I'm telling, there was also a spin. I didn't go back and reread that Pitchfork oral history, but you're going to have a lot of time on a plane, Mark, so maybe you should read it on the way over there. But I highly recommend it to anybody. There was so much contention. Well, there's a lot of contention about so Rob Schnapp, who would like I don't want to go into what their history was, but they have a lot of history, the Smith family had contacted him to mix this record, and that's all that he and his ex-girlfriend did. They mixed it, but they didn't include the guy that recorded it. They didn't even ask him. He didn't even know it was happening.
That's interesting.
Something.
Yeah. And Dave McConnell, I guess. And so, like, there's a lot of, like, he was saying, like, if I'm not misremembering reading this before, that, like, you know, Elliot didn't want Rob involved in this, in the process of making this record. And, it's very, very, very interesting, that whole contentious.
So you teased that we were going to ask Kevin for an opinion.
Yes, Kevin. Well, yeah. How do you feel about this one?
Well, so it's hard for me to frame without the overwhelming thing that when I knew that we were going to cover Elliot Smith, like anything by Elliot Smith, what I remember thinking first and foremost was like just how there are certain pockets of music fans that just can't get, like, literally could never get enough of Elliot Smith. Like, if the man had lived and it had been the most prolific mofo in the history of mofos, like, there would still not be enough.
That would be amazing. I mean, you know, album title for him, like, Elliot Smith, the most prolific mofo in the history of mofos.
Yeah. Talk about,
like, given like a thumbs up.
Yeah. Jerry Reed style.
His rap record. Yeah, anyway. Yeah, but no, I had I used to work with a lady who just could not fight, like, the depth of her adoration for Elliot Smith knew no bounds.
Well, I think it was like the fragility of his nature. It's like women just wanted to take care of him.
Well, I feel like we've had this conversation before, but yeah. Like, I do think that there's probably an aspect to that because of the fragile rock star guy, mm-hmm. you know, the tender soul.
Tender, intelligent, you know.
Yes, but let's not lose sight of the fact that the man was just a fucking...
Junkie?
Know, no, an incredible songwriter.
Sure.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Both of those.
Yeah. There's a lot of those dudes. Yeah.
That's true. Anyway, yeah, but... And as a weird side note that has, well, because we were talking about Cobain a second ago, same girl that I used to work with also held Francis Bean.
Like as a baby?
Yeah. No, as an adult. She just walked by and picked her up.
That'd be
the weirdest thing.
That'd be pretty awkward. You know, but I bet Francis Bean is used to shit like that, though, you know?
Like, dude, she looks just like her dad.
No. She looks like exactly a cross between her dad and her mom.
I know.
Like,
yeah.
That's weird.
It's the like, Lisa Marie syndrome.
Yeah.
It's like one of those
not
things.
Good.
It's like if you let your eyes go out of focus. You're like, oh, she looks exactly like Kurt Cobain. You let your eyes go out of focus. Like, whoa.
Yeah,
it's like those mall posters that you'd have to like stare at. They look like nothing, and then a
3D dinosaur would come up. Yeah.
This train is going off.
Reeling you back. Sorry, that was my fault. Anyway, yeah. So, which is to say that that I took it as when she would go on about Elliot Smith, I took that as like, okay, this is somebody who's had a few like rock and roll, like random rock and roll experiences. Literally, she was the Francis Cobain story. She was standing outside when a limo pulled up and Kurt and Courtney got out with the baby and they just said, hey, can you hold our baby for a second? They gave it to this strange woman they did not know. And she's like, sure. And she held it and then they gave it back.
Took her back?
Yeah.
Now anyway, she's a grown woman.
Yeah.
No. It would have been amazing if she looks down at the baby and then looks up and they're just like down the street running.
Yeah, I don't know.
Sure.
Anyway, yeah. So getting to the point, Shane, what I think of this record. So I think, I think a lot of things. I do think that we talked a lot already about how wrapped in melancholy it is. I am like my personal take on Elliot Smith and his catalog is that like, I do think he's a profound talent and songwriter. The breathy vocals thing for me is Ryan's Mac DeMarco.
Yeah,
like, there's a certain amount of that that's like,
well,
I don't know.
It's not
like,
just the breathy vocals. That's probably my least favorite.
And he's like triple or quadruple tracked or something.
There's a lot of the double tracking and, sometimes triple tracking like as an effect. And so it does, especially his older stuff, sometimes it gets a little...
Samey?
A little bit, but then it just his songs get better and better and better and better.
The motherfucker could write his way out of a wet paper bag.
I'd like to.
I don't know if that's the right metaphor.
I'd like to see like how big of a paper bag you have to put yourself in, and then how. Because I would
maybe
just use
one of those bags that like Yoko had to scream
where
into.
Where do you get the pen?
Where do you get the what?
The pen when you're in the bag. Like, did you go into the bag with a pen?
Yeah. Well, you just write. You could just write using your finger on the inside of the bag until it breaks.
It's wet.
It's wet.
So.
Yeah. How hard could it be?
Probably pretty hard, actually, now that you mention it. Yeah. Like, if you're having to write lyrics.
If you're having to write lyrics and then actually see them. But what I'm thinking is, like, the one caveat that I'd like to, you know, just everyone pay attention to is I would just poke through the bag with the pen and tear it open.
Here I was thinking you were going to talk about the record.
The song elsewhere.
And go finish the song at my writing desk.
Yeah. Okay, good. Anyway, getting back to the item at hand, I think... I think he's a tremendous talent. I think that the common thread of a lot of things that I read about this album by reviewers just had a lot to do with the fact that there is an inherent fragility in the way that he wrote, and it could be, we talked a little bit earlier about how it could be construed as foreshadowing that like some of these, like lyrically, some of these songs are just so direct. But the other thing that I can't seem to kind of shake, and I've never been able to shake this with when it comes to Elliot Smith, is his Heat Miser background, because it's not, this is not that.
I went back and listened to Heat Miser after falling for Elliot Smith solo stuff.
Yeah.
And I wasn't all that into it.
Yeah. There's some songs that are pretty great.
Well, he doesn't sing on any of it. does he?
Shane's shaking his head.
He was playing. He was the guitar player. But there's some of those songs are pretty good, man. Their last record is pretty. There's some good shit on it. But
well, they got signed to a major or something and then dropped, I think.
I can't remember all the Heat Miser stuff, but this is better. All things considered.
Anyway, I do think that's like when you take him outside the thing that kind of gets oft repeated, right, is the white suit at the Academy Awards in 1998.
Playing by himself.
I think it was 98. At the very least, that's
oh, it was in 98, so, but for yes. ni- but for 97.
97, for, yeah, for that. Yeah, Goodwill Hunting came out in 97, and he played just acoustic guitar by himself, like for like a billion people.
Yep.
Yeah. And he looked a little greasy then, too. So
it was a pretty amazing suit, though.
Yeah, it was an oily man.
Anyway,
let's listen to that last, A Distorted Reality is Now a Necessity to Be Free, because, boy, does that song title sound like it could be a song title. Like but I'm thinking like somebody from like a New York band from the early aughts would put out an album title, and that's the album title of it. So I don't know. Anyway. What's it called again?
A Distorted Reality is
now a Necessity to Be Free. This song has a really cool thing in it where they hold off on the drums coming in, and then dynamically they just kick in, and it's a powerful movement.
Let's get into it.
Okay.
The devil's script sells you the heart of
peculiar to you guys that this is out on Kill Rock Stars?
I mean, it's kind of dead literal.
A little.
Well, he put
on the nose.
A little on the nose.
I think his first three records were on Kill, or maybe.
Well, I think this
maybe
actually,
just
think
either.
It actually came out on Suicide Squeeze, which is also like.
I think they heated it up on Anti, which is a sub-label of Epitaph.
I think, but
which
when it was
also is
well, when it was re-released, like if you see on a like in 2010, the Kill Rock Stars put it out. But I know that Either Or was on Kill Rock Stars. I know,
yeah, first three records I believe were on Kill Rock Stars.
I don't know.
He
was on
anyway.
A bunch of different labels.
Anyway, Shane, you had a comment about this track.
Oh, this is exactly what Ryan was saying about the beat. This is some Beatles stuff.
Man. Obviously, just like absorbed the Beatles like a sponge, and then kind of reinterpreted in his own way. But and what you were noticing, like the audio on in here is not as like.
Oh yeah, you could hear the drums
but that,
come
but
at
that
a
Marshall snare and George Harrison guitar thing. Like
it's really, there's a cool like little piano outro thing that goes on. And the other thing to keep in mind is on most of these tracks, he plays most of the instruments, all of the instruments.
Well, yeah, he was proficient.
He was
on
a polymath.
Five or six,
there are a few drummers, that play on this. There's some other stuff here and there, but yeah, for the most part, like he played all this shit. He has a very distinctive drumming style to me, but.
He's like our friend Darren, who did what was his Beatles ripoffs?
The Fab Forgeries.
Fab Forgeries.
Yeah. That was some good shit. Yeah, Darren is also a polymath. He does a lot of that stuff.
He can just play everything, and his home instrument is drums, though. Even though he mostly plays guitar,
he is an incredible drummer. Yeah, I don't think he plays the. No,
he was your drummer.
He was my drummer for a while. Yep, yeah. That's true. All right, man. Who wants to do some a few minutes with?
I think it's my turn.
All righty, well, let's do it.
Hey, Hey, welcome to the middle of the show, everybody. We're going to... So, this is an opportunity for, like, I don't... Sometimes I like to pick tracks that I'm actually interested in hearing from artists that I typically enjoy.
One would hope.
And then, you know, or that I'm at least optimistic that, hey, maybe it'll work out. And then, of course, you know...
Is this one that didn't?
Well, I'm getting to the point. And then I think about how Shane does, like, the dude that did the streak.
Ray.
Subjected us to poison.
Ray Stevens.
Yeah. So this
I got a new one about to come up, too. But.
Yeah, anyway, so this is not that. But this is my long-winded way of saying that I wouldn't call myself necessarily a big fan of this artist, but this is somebody whose music I haven't known very well, and I was riding around in my car, as I am wont to do, and heard this track the other day, and I thought, okay, that's a track from this dude that I actually kind of find interesting. So I had not seen the video for it before today, and so you guys can revel in that with me. We're going to watch... Name of the song is Put Your Number in My Phone by Ariel Pink.
There's magic in the air. The night sky breaks your face like a mystery left uncovered. Talk to me. Put your number in my phone. I hope to get some time alone. I wanna get to know you more, baby. Put your number in my phone. If I could get some time alone, 'cause what would tame this gypsy.
Hey, great song, but the fuck was that video?
That video was amazing.
No, it was amazing, but
like that video was like a that video was an accidental all caps amazing video.
It was, yeah. They're like
Hannibal Lecter, an invalid Hannibal Lecter being pushed around by his pimp, like
by his rock star pimp.
With the random chain. Hey,
in a mall,
but
I think.
Yeah, in a mall. But the best scene was for about 30 seconds. It was him and that. Is Arrow Pink and that dude, and then just some random old dude like sitting in a waiting room with some ferns in it.
It's so great.
It's like rock and roll purgatory. I don't know. Like what?
I played. He used his solo thing used to be Ariel Pink's Haunted Graffiti. He's dropped the Haunted Graffiti part. I played it for you at my house one night when
had we been drinking
again. I was gonna say shocking news.
Yeah,
we had been drinking, and you were like. Because I was like, I needed to play you this weird song. Because the guy he writes great. He has great
melodies. It's a fucking great song.
But in the song that I played you, he's got it constantly modulates keys and it's got all this weird like Mac DeMarco if you were fucked by a demon.
Yeah.
And you were like, yeah, but that shit's just so weird that like I don't even dislike it.
No. Yeah. Just I mean, let's be honest. It's really the age old story. Guy in a teal cowboy hat and matching fur coat. And
it was
weird,
like a fur vest, wasn't it?
Well,
no, maybe it was a fur coat.
A long coat. Green.
Yeah green.
Some green furry animal died for that coat.
Yeah, just you know, hanging out in the mall. I don't think
just looking for all the world like everything about this is normal.
Well, also he was trying to hit on. First, he tried to hit on some like you know, barely if even out of their teens girls, and then like he was just walking around pushing this guy with a
Hannibal Lecter
mask
sort of,
kind
yeah.
of. No, it's more like well,
like Kane from the Batman
F-14 plane. Like,
but he's in a wheelchair, and
yeah,
so he's pushing him around like literally. With this imposing mask on, and then trying to pick up girls, and then jumps in the like window,
the hurricane machine.
What do you call the
hurricane simulator?
It was the hurricane simulator.
Is that what that was?
That's why he kept pushing his hat back down.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. Well, you know, good fun.
Yeah. Anyway,
we can watch it again if you want, Ryan.
I actually,
if you didn't get everything,
I actually will watch it again. And also, I'm a big fan of his music.
Yeah.
And that's easily.
What genre would you categorize that as?
Well, he made his.
Dude, you have to hear his old stuff because it's like Weird Town, but with good songs behind it. So.
Yeah, he was a big, like, he was kind of one of the main figures behind the cassette culture of the aughts.
He used to play, like, the Mohawk, and he would have played the Electric Lounge in the 90s and that kind of stuff, you know? But that was easily, like, his most accessible song I've ever, because he has lots of really well-written melodic songs, but they're buried under layers of weirdness a lot of the time. That was like his most accessible song that I
Heard. That was the trouble that I had with some of his other work was just like I was like I can't get through all of this.
You have to sort through it. Yeah. Well, that was good stuff.
Anyway, you're welcome.
I appreciate it.
Ryan's still thinking about the video. Like, there's a couple of beats.
I've got like a drunk hamster like on a wheel in my head right now, going like, huh? I don't know, man.
Kind of like, what was the, you know, one of the weirdest, I was, like, for some reason, even though they weren't anywhere near, like, the same, like, that fucking Bjork video you played, that weird-ass fucking Bjork video, for some reason, that kind of reminded me of that. I don't know why.
What are you talking about? It's Oh So Quiet?
Yeah. It was weird stuff.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
It great, so was that.
Yeah.
All right.
Kids, let's get back into
We'll go back into it.
Ryan, what does NME stand for?
New Musical Express. Express, is it? I believe it is.
It's Express.
Yeah. Okay. Well, anyway, those guys covered this record. And I'm not. They wrote a ton about it. Again, this is another. We're talking about Elliot Smith's final album, Six Guys in a Basement. What do we call it? From a Basement on the Hill.
From a Basement Under the Hill.
I think Six Guys in a Basement sounds like that'd be a different kind of record. But anyway. So they wrote quite a bit about it. I'm just going to skim a little bit of this, but I think that kind of the takeaways I thought was pretty fascinating. It said, in March of 2003, Elliot Smith gave what would turn out to be his last interview to a small American magazine called Under the Radar. He hadn't released a record in 3 years since 2000's Figure Eight, and in that time, dark tales about his condition had proliferated. His long-term battles with heroin addiction and alcoholism and the severe depressive episodes which had led him to being incarcerated in a mental hospital were reasonably well-known. Recently, though, he had struggled to even get through a gig without it disintegrating. In 2003, NME witnessed a show in L.A. that amounted to an excruciating, quote, hour of false starts and rambling. The whole spectacle is so messy that you want to watch, you want to offer empathy, the writer concluded, but all you can do is sort of watch uncomfortably. Anyway, and then the Under the Radar, the journalist that did this last interview, repeated worse rumors, chiefly stating that Smith had been found out cold in an L.A. toilet, British reference. A needle.
Not a bathroom, a toilet.
Yes, at a toilet. A needle hanging from his arm. But when the magazine visited the singer-songwriter at his home studio in a city, they were confronted by an unusually bright Smith. So I do think in a weird way, that seems like kind of a microcosm of the like sort of downward spiral of his career. He was still an immensely creative dude and still at the top of his game with regard to songcraft. He was just in over his head.
Well, that's what I think, like, for me personally, that was so, like, I knew, especially again, I keep referencing this, but I promise you it's worth the read, that that oral history is that he really, for the last, you know, he had gotten sober, like, in the last, you know, 6 months to a year. He not only got sober, he stopped drinking alcohol, caffeine, red meat, like one of those LA things.
Yeah.
It struck me as, like, he quit doing everything too much.
Well, then that's what a lot of people do. Like, they swing from one end of the pendulum to the other.
He was hardcore sober.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But one of the things that I thought was really surprising and why I didn't have a lot I didn't expect a lot out of this record is because you see it all the time. I mean, with so many artists that you like, as they either get older and get fucked up or get older and get complacent, they just, their output sucks. And
no, there's a steep drop off in creative output, or like quality of creative output.
Not if you work at it, there's not. Well, but you see it a lot.
There is, I think it sounds like maybe we're kind of where you're both going is like, there is something creatively to be had from metaphorically, like, staring into the chasm. Like,
well, I think you're, not to interrupt you.
Sure, no, you're fine.
I think there's also something to be said that, you know, it sounds like to me from listening to this record that when he didn't have anything else that he could, you know, that would make him feel better about himself, he could fucking put him,
just pour it into music,
into the work, right? And that's, I mean, there's so.
I guess my point with the drop off in creative quality, Hall & Oates, man, like first 5 years of that collaboration was amazing, and then they put out shit like Method of Modern Love and shit like that, and like everything they did the last couple records like sucked.
But
ass.
Don't you think that in a lot of ways, in a lot of times you'll see it, you know, like people burn out their creative ideas. You know, it doesn't always happen. I mean, Dylan was putting out great records into, you know, his 60s, like,
yeah, but he'd wait, but like after three or four years away,
right? After years away, I think it. You know, the great example is the Flaming Lips. I mean, like they continue to, but they do the work. It's like if you go and you do the work. If you sit in the woods, see, the thing is that I think a lot of that is that once, like, things are badass and you're a fucking rock star millionaire, you're like, why do I gotta go?
Yeah, screw it. I'll just.
Why do I gotta work on this?
Well,
you know?
I think
I've got a contract. I'm just gonna put this little piece of shit out.
I think it's also fair. Well, yeah.
Daniels is another good example of somebody that is consistently good.
Contractual obligations, I think, are a song killer sometimes. But I also think that it's totally possible. I mean, frankly, I just think it's ironclad truth that the well is not the exact same amount of deep for everybody. So some of it, to your point, Shane, about putting in the work and like finding the reserve, like going to find shit. But you look at like just think about the things that we've covered, right? Like, so you look at Portishead's third record, like, a good part of that was just remnants that had been laying around of songs that they had to finish, and they finally put it together. Now, without getting into the context of that, which is obviously different than this album that we're talking about here.
They're both depressing as fuck. So they got that going for them.
In different ways.
Yeah.
There are rays of sunshine in this album.
Yeah.
Melodically, yes. Lyrically, not as much. But.
Oh, no, there's some. Fine. Fair enough.
Anyway. Is there another one you want to roll?
Yeah, I want to listen. So speaking of Flaming Lips, again, I don't know why we've been doing this fucking show for 4 years, and I can never figure out what Stephen
drummer for Flaming Lips.
Sure.
He plays drums on the first track, Coast to Coast, which is, I think, one of my favorite songs
on this record. It's a maelstrom of a song.
There's some stuff going on in it.
A lot. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Strap in. Stuff.
So let's listen to that.
Song. It's undeniably Elliott Smith, but it's not necessarily fragile the way a lot of his catalog is.
No, it's not.
That's some good shit, and it doesn't hurt that he has quite arguably the best American rock drummer from the last 20 years on that fucking track, man. Like,
I'd probably go with Dave Grohl, but he doesn't really
play. Arguably.
Yeah. Well, we can have that argument if you want, but
No, we're not going to have that argument. I still,
20 minutes later. Anyway, yeah.
Yeah, we probably will. 20 minutes later. Fuck you, Ryan.
I've got no new art to amuse you. I've got no desire to use you. He sings in that track. And Rolling Stone says that this is an album about the seductions of oblivion. And I don't know. That, to me, sounds like a little bit of just...
poetic license?
Exactly. I mean, certainly in light of facts, like, or, you know, in lieu of the way that things turned out. But that song is, you know, it's like, it's densely arranged. It's a little bit haphazard. It is heavier than you know, typically what he brings to the table as a solo artist.
I've seen in a couple places like this, it's kind of thought of as Elliott Smith's grunge record.
I've never even heard of that before. There's some little heavy. That didn't sound like grunge to me. But
yeah, but it's, I mean, it's kind of angry and got a bunch of.
It's just a little bit louder. I mean, it sounds like early aughts, like, you know, infusion with like post-punky. Like, there was a lot of stuff going on at that time, like that sounded like that to me.
Well, like I said before, we got into it. Like, it's a maelstrom of a song. Like, there's just a whole lot going on, but at the core of it, like, there's still like a really well-written, beautiful melody.
Beautiful melody. I mean, that's the guy had that in spades for sure. There was one thing that we were. I was, you know, Mark had the Wikipedia page for this record on over his shoulder. It's one of the things I forgot about. Is that whenever the family had asked them to do when the guy did the recording got shut out, he had 3 years worth of notes that nobody had, like how Elliot like recording notes, how he wanted it to be mixed. You know, nobody ever consulted him.
The McConnell guy.
Yeah. Was it David McConnell?
Yeah, David McConnell. Yeah. And I was thinking about that too. It'd be really interesting if he got to take a swing at this and like remix it. Like,
yeah,
it how different
totally
would this album
different.
Come out?
Yeah,
I mean, you know, that's
somewhat. I would think
that's what his family. That's what his family chose, and that's what they felt comfortable with. And honestly, like the album sounds great. It would be interesting and cool. And also, it was pretty shitty to fucking keep the guy that recorded the record out of
that
the mixing process
poured
completely.
His heart and soul into it.
Well, I mean, he just, you know, for three years worth of notes, I mean, that's a lot of time to spend with somebody.
Well,
you know?
And ideally, you'd want to, like, fulfill Elliot's vision.
Yes.
And who better to do that than the guy who recorded the record?
Yeah. Well, I mean, we don't really know what was going on, but to me, it sounds like he kind of got that.
It sounds like there's family beef against that guy.
Short end of the stick a little bit.
Yeah.
I don't know. All right. Well, that was Elliott Smith. There were some basements and on hills and...
Basements and hills.
From
something.
A basement on the hill.
Oh, sounds right. Yeah, I like the way you say that.
All right.
Okay.
You guys want to do a current affair?
Current affair. Ryan, what you got?
That is me this week, and I'm going to go a little off script from what I normally do.
What, you're not going to play like us a song from like 1975?
No, I actually just saw this artist like maybe 2 days ago on Late Night with Seth Meyers. Like, I think this song doesn't even have a video yet, but it is on YouTube, but it's Modern Country. And you know my policy on like watching artists on television, I'll give them 30 seconds. I watched the whole thing, and it was pretty good.
Who is it?
It's Devin Dawson, and the song is called Asking for a Friend.
All right, let's do it.
Just wondering if anyone was sitting here, and if not, would it be okay if someone bought you a beer? Let's say that someone wanted to dance. Would he have a snowball in hell, a chance to get you out on the floor before this slow song? Oh, hey, just asking for a friend.
sometimes modern country makes it really hard to love them, but I think that's a pretty decent song.
Yeah. This is a decent song, too. Like, oh, well, I do. That's what I was saying. Like, I love Kacey Musgraves, and, like, she's brought
she's
this
like
whole...
She's, taking the world over right now.
Well, she's brought this whole, like, kind of progressive, not progressive necessarily, like, in a political sense, but progressive, like, ideas... You know, as far as music and incorporating pop in a different kind of way.
Yeah, I don't know her stuff as well as you do, but like that song has atmospheric kind of guitars in it. And
can I say
the chorus kind of breaks down into kind of traditional country
stuff? Yeah, but that's a good hook. I mean, like, so yeah, it does break down into that. I will say one thing about Devin Dawson is that for some reason he has an eighth grade dude mustache. So
like a little wisp.
A little wisp. Like he's completely
he's going out for track.
But he's got that little wisp of a mustache on his upper lip. Which was very maybe. Enjoyable to watch every time I saw it. But
maybe he's just an optimist.
Well, I don't think he's in eighth grade anymore.
you don't see a lot of eighth graders playing late night talk shows.
That's kind of my point. But yeah. I mean, you know.
Not national ones, no.
No, not national ones. Or late night.
Only the locally syndicated.
I honestly was thinking, what is a national eighth grader?
Old Uncle. Oh. Old Uncle Granny's afternoon time Sunday show. Hey, today we got a eighth grader Devin Dawson on our show.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. Mom, keep it down. Yeah, anyway, not like that. But
no,
yeah,
I pointed out to Shane that I think there are a lot of guitar parts on that song that sound like him and his old band, Kling. And
sure, I could see that. Yeah, it was
I think that's what drew me in. I was like, oh yeah, I remember this. It was my buddy's
band.
Well,
that's you know, not to talk about that necessarily, but like it's interesting to see like every so often when there's like
you said it was reverb delay,
reverb and delay. Yeah, for sure. But there's you know every so often when country music gets really like I remember a couple of years ago. We were in your garage, Kevin, and I played that thing.
Oh, I think about it.
All these top five country songs.
Salad Days.
And yes.
Don't lie.
They all sounded exactly
the
same.
Mike, we did talk about a garage, even though it was late in the show. So, Mike, if you're playing your own bingo game, there you go.
Rewarded for hanging.
But remember I played that thing where somebody put it all on Pro Tools and like matched all these songs up and they were,
yes,
exactly
and they were
the
exact same song.
Uh-huh. Well, that's when you know something's about to go off a fucking cliff and not long after that or right
before
that.
Well, and the clock resets and, like, it, you know, things get interesting for a little while.
Well, that's
so
what I'm
saying. We've got, you know, like this guy. We've got Jason Isbell.
Jason Isbell is a great example. He's awesome.
Kacey Musgraves.
Kacey Musgraves is great. There's a woman there's a few people that I've been hearing, like, pop up in the periphery, in my periphery, not, you know, in general, that have been really, really...
The grand and periphery?
It reminds... Well, shut up, asshole. It reminds me of, like, in the early 80s when you had, like, a... You know, basically, country music had devolved into keyboard pop. And then out of nowhere, came George Strait and Randy Travis and, you know...
Oh, man, I still think Forever and Ever Amen is, like, one of the best songs.
It's a fucking
of all
home
time.
Run, dude. A lot of those songs are, but you see what I'm saying? Like when that music is sort of built to be like a
yeah.
Very
well, no, they'll wring out the sponge as far as they can, and then
right. And like, then somebody new's gonna come in there.
Somebody comes in and just is like, "Fuck you guys, we're doing this now."
Well, and you know, and this is different, but I mean, like you know, when we first started talking about Sturgill Simpson a few years ago, again in the garage days. You know, that guy is a force to reckon with now, you know.
That is true.
So
he has too many horns in his band for me, but at this point. But
it is what it is. What I'm saying is that he's...
But he's definitely not doing anything by the numbers.
At the time, you would have never known that somebody that had that kind of traditional sound was going to go and fucking explode in that way, you know? So that's all I'm saying. It doesn't matter about whether you like it or not.
Yeah. Hey, I sound like Waylon Jennings, but I love Radiohead.
Yeah, that's a fair assessment, I think. Okay, boys, thanks for listening. Ryan.
All right, man. I've really been, like, I didn't know until about a half hour ago what I was going to pick for next week, but I think it's time that we covered some funk. So I'm going to do Parliament 1978 record, One Nation Under the Groove. And Yeah. I think it's time
to be like going home.
That shit.
I'm actually really surprised that we never have.
Well, we talked about Atomic Dog, which is technically a George Clinton solo song on one of the shows, but we have not listened to a funk record as of yet.
Yeah.
And it's about time.
All right.
Well I'm into
sad,
it. We'll
sad to miss that one.
Shopping for some platforms. Yeah, Mark will be working on his Spanish or his Catalan next week.
His Spanish?
Yeah, yes. So I'll actually be out 3 weeks, guys.
Oh
so
yeah.
You can manage without me.
Yeah, no. It's like we're gonna totally change the format
Every
of the
listener's
show.
Gonna
we're gonna move the furniture around.
I was gonna say, I was just talking shit to Mike right now, but you know what? We will be back in a garage.
We will be. Yeah.
So
anyway, that's happening next week. But for this week, I'm Kevin.
I'm Ryan.
I'm Mark.
I'm Shane.
This is Somebody Likes It.